Today we plan to continue in Daniel chapter 11. And last week we finished up with, we're right in the middle of Antiochus Epiphanes is where we are. Last week was whenever he went down, and historically what this king of Syria, here he's known as the king of the north, and he's a Greek king, he wanted to attack, which he did, attack Egypt, and wanted to take them over, and he did this twice. And so last week we covered the first time, and then today is going to be the second time. Now, each time, as you notice, he's up here. He's in Antiochus, his headquarters. He travels down here to Egypt, attacks them, and then it's on his way back. Jerusalem is right in the middle. Both of these times, on his way back, he brutalized Jerusalem. And so, it was 300 years beforehand, God told Daniel all about this. And so, Daniel recorded this 300 years before it happened. But the first time, why he brutalized Jerusalem, he came down and Antiochus Epiphanes paid off the Egyptian generals. And so it wasn't much of a fight for him, and it was a massacre on the Egyptian side. And so he defeated them handily, everything but Alexandria. And I'm not sure, the commentators didn't mention why he didn't take Alexandria, but that's going to be the reason for him to come the second time. But then after he finishes his conquering of Egypt, he's going back to Antioch, here his headquarters in Syria. But as he has to pass through Jerusalem, well, the Israelites had heard that Antiochus Epiphanes got killed in the battles, and they were rejoicing because they couldn't stand him. He was a brutal, evil, wicked man. Well, word came while he was still here in Egypt that they were rejoicing at the false hearing of his death. So here he is. He comes right through Jerusalem, and he brutalizes them. He punishes them for celebrating his death, or the hearing of his death. So then, that's what we finished up with last week. That was the first attack of Antiochus on Jerusalem. Now, today is going to be the second time he comes through, because he never got to attack Alexandria. So that's the one thing that he didn't conquer. So he's going back. But this time is not going to be like the previous two cities. The former and the latter is what Daniel recorded. It's not going to be like that, because he ran roughshod over the two previous cities that he conquered. But this time, Rome is going to send ships from Cyprus, from here. Rome sends ships down, and from the Roman Senate, they have a meeting and give word to Antiochus Epiphanes that you are not going to attack Alexandria. So, he is mad about that, because he knows Rome is, more in its very early stages, and it has not done all the conquest. It does not control Asia Minor at this time. It does not control Egypt at this time. And they don't control Jerusalem. So they're still geographically somewhat small, but they're already gaining power. And so he knows that he can't go against Rome. And so he tucks his tail. He tells them, okay, I won't conquer them. I'll go home. But of course, he's not happy. A dictator's not happy when they are told what to do. And so he tucks his tails between his legs. And on his way home, well, of course, he's having to go right through Jerusalem again. And boy, he takes it out on them big time. Much worse than the first time. And that's what God tells Daniel will be the abomination of desolation that Jesus then refers to in Matthew 24, that this is going to happen again. He said in this generation, but it was in 70 AD, but it was going to be by the Romans this time, was going to brutalize, desecrate the temple. He did all of these things, and Rome did it again in 70 AD. So that's the correlation with this, with Antiochus Epiphanes and then 70 AD with the Romans. The temple gets brutalized both times and abused with pig's blood and false idols inside, all kinds. And then also the sacrifices are stopped. So Antiochus, he stops the sacrifices the second time. And then, of course, that is repeated in 70 AD. They were ended permanently in 70 AD. But it was just for a short time while Antiochus is brutalizing them that he stopped the sacrifices and made it illegal. And upon punishment of death. Okay, so that is what we will be covering here is this second attack on Jerusalem. Also, what is mentioned in verse 34 is they will be aided by little help. That's what God calls what ended up being the Maccabees, with Judas Maccabeus had rebels, Jewish rebels, ally themselves, and they were fighting against Antiochus. They eventually beat him back, but God calls that only a little help is all that they were, because ultimately what it was, God had Antiochus attacking the Israelites because they were turning unrighteous, and when Antiochus outlawed the law of Moses, the vast majority of the Jews went right along with him, had no problem with it. There was only a small rebellion against it. And so this brought forth the unrighteous. And so everyone could see who the unrighteous were as they're now getting, God's preparing them for the coming of the Messiah in a couple of hundred years or so. Now the Jews, God says that what the Maccabees did was just a little help. Now the Jews thought this was like one of the greatest things of all time. They still celebrate it today, what is known as Hanukkah, or the Festival of Lights. That is what the Maccabees did in pushing back against Antiochus Epiphanes. So they think this is something huge and great. God calls it just a little help is all that it was. That's all they did. But anyway, I guess they'll celebrate this, I guess, until the end of time. I don't, who knows. But they've been celebrating this for over 2,000 years now. And this little help. Okay, any questions or comments on any of this?
So were they Jewish?
Yes, they were Jews.
Were they from the tribe of Judah?
Yes, yes. That's right. Yes. And then there were a bunch of these Jews that were unrighteous. They fell right in to these false Greek gods. Zeus was one statue that the commentators mentioned that they erected in the temple. And they went to worshiping that and had no problem about anything. And it was upon penalty of death, that they observe the Sabbath. They observe anything of the law of Moses. If the Greeks found out, Antiochus found out, then those were killed. And 40,000 Jews were killed is what got reported, I think, through Josephus. And but then the vast majority, no problem. So then there was just a remnant that was left that was righteous. And maybe that is also somewhat why there's only a few, seems like, that are waiting on the kingdom, waiting for the Messiah. But here in the temple, we know that there is Anna, and then there's a elderly prophet that's 90 years old. His name's not coming to me right offhand. But anyway, whenever they bring Jesus to present him before the Lord after the 40-day waiting period, and Joseph and Mary bring Jesus into the temple, then he says, well, God had told me that I would live to see the Messiah, and now I have. And it's thought that he died just soon after that, is what is the thought is. But anyway, this 200 years before, they were turning unrighteous. Now, I'm also thinking that this probably turned them back to righteousness after this persecution and all. And so hopefully a lot of them changed their ways. But it's only a few that we hear about, even in the other accounts of the gospel, of the ones that were waiting on the kingdom. Even after the Messiah has shown himself, there's just, you know, we get Joseph of Arimathea, and we get a Nicodemus. Those two are mentioned that they are waiting on the kingdom, but it's still, you know, just small mentionings, very few of, so, and then whenever the Messiah is here, and then they kill him, that's also probably still remnants from 200 years in the past that never became righteous. So anyway, this is like a background that's for what we see on the scene of in the first century. Okay, so any questions or comments on any of this? Okay, we will start in verse 29, Daniel chapter 11, verse 29. And Daniel continues here, says, at the appointed time. Now, every time that is mentioned, the commentators say this is a change of scenery. Also, if it mentions then, that's a change of scenery. And so, this is a clue that now we're going to a different time. So we're going into the future here several years. It's maybe 4 or 5 years getting set up for the second attack of Antiochus on Egypt. But at the appointed time, he shall return and go toward the south. And he is Antiochus Epiphanes. He's going to return back to Egypt, going toward the south, since he's the king of the north there in Syria. But it shall not be like the former or the latter. There were two cities that he conquered previously by buying off the generals, and that was easy. But this is not going to be like those two cities. He's not even going to get to fight. And then for this 29, Clark comment on it is, Antiochus, finding that his treasury was detected and the Egyptian king had united his counsel and strength, he threw off the mask, and having collected a great army early in the spring, he re-entered Egypt. And since the inhabitants of Memphis submitted to him previously, that was the former, he came by easy marches to Alexandria. But as God said through Daniel, it shall not be as the former or the latter. He did not have the same success as the former as he overthrew the Egyptian armies, nor as the latter when he took Memphis and subdued all Egypt except for Alexandria. So, this is what Clark said here is, he had heard that the Egyptian king, after he conquered him, now has had several years, and he's now allied himself now with the Romans. And that made Antiochus mad. And he's gaining strength now with his strong allies. And so he's thinking, no, I'm going to go down there, and I'm going to completely wipe him out this time. That's what his plan was. So verse 30. For ships from Cyprus shall come against him, and these are the Romans. Therefore he shall be grieved and return in rage against the Holy Covenant and do damage. So he's going to do damage against Jerusalem. They are the Holy Covenant. So he shall return and show regard for those who forsake the Holy Covenant. So he's going to praise those who reject the law of Moses, and he's going to show high regard for those who reject the law of Moses, and then he's going to punish even to death those who hold on to the law of Moses. So that's what this, he shows high regard for those who reject God. Those Israelites that reject God. He praises them and they don't get the punishment. And Clark said about this, Cyprus is well known to mean the Roman Empire. Antiochus, being now in full march to besiege Alexandria and within 7 miles of that city, heard that ships had arrived there from Rome with ambassadors from the Senate. He went to salute them. They delivered the letters from the Senate to him, in which he was commanded, on pain and of the displeasure of the Roman people, to put an end to the war against Egypt. So the Roman people and the Roman Senate did not want to see another war in Egypt. And so they're putting a stop to it right here before it starts. Antiochus said that he would go and consult his friends. So he said, well, let me think about it. And I'll consult my allies and we'll see if we still want to attack Alexandria. At that time, one of the ambassadors, the Roman ambassadors, took his staff and instantly drew a circle around Antiochus on the sand where he stood. And he commanded Antiochus not to pass out of that circle until he had given a definite answer. So this Roman ambassador said, no, you're not going to leave this circle until you give us an answer. Yes or no, are you going to attack them? And then, of course, if he was going to attack them, he was going to come against Rome, because Rome was going to send their armies down there. And so really, Antiochus Epiphanes did not have a choice, and he was furious over this, and he's going to take this rage out against the Israelites on his way home. So Antiochus was intimidated and said he would do whatever the Senate commanded him to do. And for a dictator, that is, they'd almost rather die than do this, but he didn't have a choice. So now, as a bully will do, when a bully gets humbled somewhat, they go and take it out on weaker people. Well, he's the bully going to take it out on the Israelites from here. And in a few days, he began his march to return to Syria, grieving and groaning, being mortified, humbled, and disappointed in not being able to conquer Alexandria and being turned back. Antiochus Epiphanes then returned in a rage against the Holy Covenant, for he vented his rage against the Jews, and he sent his general with 22,000 men against Jerusalem, plundered and set fire to the city, pulled down the houses around it, slew much of the people, and built a castle on the same hill as the temple. and slew multitudes of the poor people who had come up to worship at the temple. He polluted every place so that the temple service was totally abandoned, and all of the people fled from the city. And when he returned, when Antiochus returned back to his hometown, Antioch, he published a decree that all should conform to the pagan Greek worship. So this is Zeus and whatever else. These Greek, all this Greek mythology. He's commanding that all the Israelites now have to start worshiping all that Greek mythology. And the Jewish worship was totally forbidden, and the temple itself was consecrated to the false Greek god Zeus. How great must the wickedness of the Jews have been when God would allow this? Now that was Clark's comment. How wicked must the Israelites have already been for God to have sent this type of punishment onto the Israelites? So that this is telling us how wicked that they'd already turned. And whenever they, for the most part, go wholeheartedly to worshiping all these Greek gods, that tells us how far gone that they already were. So this is a punishment to bring them back, right? A couple hundred years before God's going to send the Messiah to earth. As far as he had regard for those who forsake the Holy Covenant, Clark said, these were the wicked high priest and the apostate Jews who forsook God. He praised them, and then he punished the Israelites that would not worship all these false Greek gods. And then I'm going to end with this paragraph again that Clark wrote. He said, it may be proper to stand a little here and reflect how precise this prophecy is concerning Egypt and Syria. From the death of Alexander the Great to the time of Antiochus Epiphanes, there is not so concise, comprehensive, and accurate of an account of their kings and affairs to be found in any authors of those times. The prophecy is really more perfect than any historical account. So, he's saying how accurate. He said this is a good time to just stop and reflect of how accurate all of this prophecy was that was given to Daniel several hundred years before all of this history laid out, and that there was not a historian of the day of all of these things that happened anywhere from Alexander the Great to Antiochus Epiphanes. There was not a historian that had such a complete, accurate, comprehensive, and concise account. We're getting several hundred years of history in just a few verses, and everything's just hitting the mark exactly what happened historically. And where Dave Miller, years ago, from Brown Trail, from the School of Preaching there, I was in a class, and he said that is another evidence of the Bible, that it was not written by man, but it was inspired by God. Because vast amounts of information is put in such a small, concise amount of words and number of words. It, just a verse or two is all that it takes for man to write chapters and volumes over. And so this is what we get here. Also, we have a short, concise, over a page or two of hundreds of years of history, historians have written volumes and volumes and volumes over. So that's why he said that there's not so concise, comprehensive, nor an accurate of an account of these happenings over these several hundred years as what God gave Daniel at this time. So I'm going to end this first lesson with what Don Simpson said from here. And from here on out, we're going to, I'm going to be going with what Don Simpson, I felt like that he gave, had the best understanding of finishing out this Daniel chapter 11 and into Daniel chapter 12. So we're going to go with him as the commentator, Don Simpson. And he taught at the preacher's training school down in at Brown Trail in Fort Worth and years ago. And Timothy had him, and he was a good teacher. But he wrote this book on Daniel.